good morning, everybody. Little Beach Boys this morning. Hope you're doing well. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and it is our Thursday edition with lots going on this morning. Lots and lots. In fact, later in the show, we're going to be joined by John Berlow. He heads the Center for Entrepreneurs and Investors at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And John is possibly going to give us a scoop. He's going to join us following the announced decision by the Supreme Court this morning on the legality of parts of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Don't know what Sarbanes-Oxley is? You're going to find out if you stay tuned this morning. We will educate you on that. Also, new claims for jobless benefits go up again. So are we coming out of the recession? Are we going deeper into it? What's going on there? We'll talk about it. And, of course, British Petroleum CEO Tony Hayward faces the wrath of an upset congressional committee today. He will run the gauntlet, will he not? Are governments worldwide growing like a cancer? What do you think? We're going to talk about that as well. Meantime, this is Tampa Bay's only ongoing, regular, libertarian radio show, Freedom Works. We are here to champion the concept of less federal government, less cancer in your life, and more of you and personal responsibility. We come to mail at yahoo.com. FreedomWorks email at yahoo.com. A mask and chest protector on. We are able to take a look at him as he walks into the congressional hearing. Put away all of the hardballs that will be thrown by a congressional committee. This is a wonderful time, if you enjoy pomp and circumstance, to watch powdered up congressmen in front of a camera preen and yell and scream and shake their fist and try to justify their jobs by pointing blame at somebody sitting in front of them. It is an American tradition, is it not? The public face that most Americans associate with BP and the Gulf disaster, and the one that has also come to represent charges of corporate arrogance and greed. Tony Hayward is facing Congress now. Lawmakers are going to take turns, of course, in a long-awaited public flogging. I guess, what's the word, Lee? Comeuppance? Have you ever heard the word comeuppance?
Unfortunately, yes, I have, yes.
Comeuppance is when somebody that has been getting away with all kinds of bad things finally gets his due. And there's just that human emotion of satisfaction. And that's what's going to happen to Tony Hayward.
Justice comes to mind.
Justice comes to mind. Now, I don't know why we just don't go back to the days when people did something wrong, they were subjected to public humiliation in front of the church doors, the sackcloth and ashes, or running the gauntlet. I mean, there was a gauntlet. I mean, where do you think it came from? There was an actual running of the gauntlet.
How did that work?
Here's how it worked. Here's how it worked. The townspeople would actually line up on either side of a pathway. They would have sticks in their hands or various kinds of cooking utensils. And whoever it was that had done wrong, it usually was a community wrong. This is why the entire community got to participate in it. They would force this person to run down this path. In the meantime, broomsticks and pieces of wood and croquet posts and things like that would be beaten upon him or her as they was as they were running along. And I guess there was some sort of this was called redemption in certain ways and personal satisfaction. So now only the term running the gauntlet remains, but this is as close to running a gauntlet as you probably will ever see. If you turn on to C-SPAN this morning or perhaps one of the cable news stations, they will have a lot of this testimony going on. I think C-SPAN 3 is going to show it in its entirety. And if you add some of the comments that the CEO of BP, Tony Hayward, has made, like, I wish I could get my life back from all of this trouble, you know, things like that, you know that that will be brought up as well. And then the chairman of BP yesterday came out after a discussion with President Obama and talked about helping make it right for all of the small people. So open mouth, insert foot has occurred with British Petroleum, as if there wasn't enough reason to be upset with them. They're also going to talk in this congressional hearing, to be sure, about newly disclosed documents that show that British Petroleum was hiding the actual amount of oil spill. The estimate now is that about 60,000 barrels a day was flowing into the Gulf, far higher than what BP said publicly. But they've got information that shows that BP probably knew that they were having that much of a spillage at the time. So that will undoubtedly be brought up as well. And you can also bet the ranch that they will bring up the fact that British Petroleum has a bad track record when it comes to quality control of the work that they do. They've got a track record which makes all of the other large oil companies like ExxonMobil and Shell look like choir boys. Very, very poor quality control, ongoing poor quality control, which finally came to a head in this oil spill in the Gulf. Now, technically, Hayward is appearing before the House Energy and Commerce Committee and its subcommittee, technically the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee. And this is the one investigating the whole thing. And don't forget, 11 workers were killed on that oil rig out in the Gulf. So, anyway, it will be great theater. And there's always the question, after all of this is over with, as to whether or not a guy like Tony Hayward will survive in his position. And, of course, the stockholders will have a lot to say about that. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's do this. Let us take our first break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the latest jobless figures that have come about. Good, bad, or indifferent. We'll discuss them, so don't go away.
If I could guarantee everyone laughed at my jokes, I would. So anyway, this guy says,
if I could guarantee my mother-in-law agreed with me.
Honey, are you sure you really want to do it that way? I mean, far be it from.
Yeah, I would.
I would too. And if you could hire a business with a guarantee, you would. Now you can. Protect yourself with the Super Guarantee from Super Media. Just look in the Verizon Yellow Pages. From painters to caterers to AC repairmen, you'll get the job done right, or we'll step in and help to make it right. Best of all, it's free.
Well, I can't guarantee my neighbor will ever return my weed whacker. It's been 6 months. I can protect myself with the Super Guarantee.
Why wouldn't you? Just look for the shield in the only Yellow Pages with the Super Guarantee, the Verizon Yellow Pages, and let the good guys, you know, the ones in the yellow capes, come to the rescue.
On its way now, the new Verizon Yellow Pages with larger, easier-to-read print. Look inside for the Super Guarantee from Super Media. Restrictions apply. See full terms and conditions for this program at superguarantee.com.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Good day. Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. June 17, 2010. Gold opened this morning at 1238.40. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for 1271.33, 635.66 for a half ounce, or 317.83 for the quarter ounce. That's 1271.33, 635.66, or 317.83.
Making the right decision is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or worse, depression? Many investors are turning to gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold. Discussing costs, benefits, risks, the book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold can be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, this book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Well, guess what, Paul? We're back with no music, and I'm very sorry about that.
That's all right. Are we on the air?
Yeah, we're on the air.
I can sing a little bit. What do you like?
I'd love to hear that.
I've been blessed with a great voice.
Yes, you have. As a matter of fact, I'd like to hear you sing, as a matter of fact.
I would leave you, it wouldn't be in springtime, knowing that in spring I'm dependent on you. No, never in springtime, possibly winter or fall.
That's some good
but
stuff.
But Lee, I'd
who
never
needs,
leave you.
Boy?
I'm not finished.
Sorry.
But Lee, I'd never leave you at all.
Can I run the gauntlet now?
You just did, listening
what,
to that.
What about being pilloried? Can we have somebody pilloried?
You know, I don't
or
know.
Pilloried. I don't know.
You know, pilloried, that was another, you know, that we had some fun, loving civilizations throughout the course of history, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure what the pillorying was. Doesn't that have to do with tying a person up between two large pillars or?
Oh, really?
I don't know.
I thought it was like being in the stocks or something like that.
But well, no, but originally, pillorying.
Oh, originally.
It was like, you know,
well,
in the Bible, Samson and Delilah and all that, where they tied him to the temple pillars and stuff like that. Would that be pillaring?
You know, I'm going to have to look at Wikipedia.
We'll have to look.
I'm sure Wikipedia.
Wikipedia or Google will give us the answer.
Yes. So I
it will give us
that.
The answer. But anyway, I'm like sorry that we didn't have some great music.
I know. Well, I had several phone calls, like five crises going on at the same
not
time.
Not a problem.
It was terrible.
No.
And I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right.
I'll make it up to you.
I don't know how, unless you really play some great music the next break, which will be at about 10:30. But in the meantime, we got a lot of things to talk about. While I have you, though, Lee, and it's a delight to be back with you. Lee and I go back a long, long time together. We both came out of Leavenworth at the same time. We befriended each other while we were in there.
We did time together. Learned a lot.
But all seriousness aside, I do have a question for you.
Sure.
You know, with all the Gulf oil problems, and you like to go to the beach, and I was always looking for a scout to monitor the quality of the water off of the Clearwater Beach area. Now,
off of the pier, maybe, or something.
Yeah. Is the water clear right now around Tampa Bay?
Last thing I heard, I haven't been out there for like...
Oh, you haven't been out there?
I haven't been out there for a couple of months.
Okay.
But,
all right.
I mean, the last thing
have
I
you
heard,
seen or heard
no
a...
problem.
Yeah, it's clear, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
We don't have any effect of the Gulf oil spill, correct, here?
Not that I've heard.
Okay. So my second question, and I don't know if you can answer it. You have to go back a ways to when you were out there. Are we still getting a lot of good crowds that go out to the beach, or do you think that the oil spill has hampered the public reaction or tourism down here in West Central Florida?
I think it has, yeah, because
you do.
I mean, the last time I was out, which is 2 to 3 weeks ago, you know, a lot of, like the guys who rent the umbrellas out there in Clearwater Beach, they were bummed out. I mean, they did not have the usual turnout. So, yeah, it's definitely negatively affected.
You do think so?
Yeah. And
I've
been reading stories that it's down by as much in, especially up in the panhandle, you know, as much as 50%. But
well, I know that the panhandle is affected.
Not that much.
But I wondered about how we are affected here, like Clearwater Beach and Madeira Beach and all the way down St. Pete Beach. And
why don't I research it for you?
No, well, I mean, yeah, it was just
opinion.
A general question. I wondered from a personal perspective, you know, because I've heard that the beach from other people has been busy. And so I guess the real question is, has tourism been affected by a perception, wrongly so, that the St. Pete Clearwater area and further south has been affected, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's...
My guess is yes.
Okay, yeah. So the entire state of Florida on the West Coast with the Gulf involved probably has been affected.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to the Atlantic side.
Yeah, like when the movie Jaws came out, people were afraid to go in the water anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't any more sharks, but...
You know, right.
They were terrified to go in the water.
Mm-hmm.
In the ocean.
Well, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Anyway, we want to talk a little bit about the new claims for jobless benefits, and they are on the rise. The number of people filing new claims for unemployment jumped last week after three straight declines. Initial claims for jobless rose by 12,000 to 472,000 in total, according to the Labor Department today, and that's the highest level in a month. Now, first-time jobless claims have been hovering near about 450,000 since the start of the year. They had been falling in the second half of 2009, but they started up again in 2010. So, I don't know what all of that means. It says here still the four-week average for unemployment dipped a little bit. The four-week average, to about 464,000. All these numbers, after a while, makes your eyes glaze over, but the bottom line is we're still at just under 10% unemployment, and it doesn't look like things are getting a heck of a lot better out there. And so I guess one of the questions is any of the things that the federal government is doing making any difference whatsoever? And I think the answer is generally no. They're not. They're getting us as a country deeper in debt because, of course, they're borrowing money to spend on so-called economic stimulus. So I would say overall it's hurting us, as opposed to if the federal government had done nothing at all and kind of got out of the way and allowed this entire problem, whether it's with AIG or General Motors or any of the other companies that were having financial trouble, if it had stayed out of their way and let the free market take its course, I would suggest to you that things would be at least as good or better. But now we're in deeper debt because we are throwing stimulus money at these different industries and different companies, and it is not working. We've talked before about the huge increase in public jobs, jobs where you work for the government, as opposed to the minuscule increase in private sector jobs. And that should tell you something right there. And it leads us to a discussion of whether or not governments have been involved so much in the free market in the last couple of years that they are now expanding like a cancer, like an out-of-control cancer. Well, we're going to take a look at a report that it was presented by Mark Faber. Now, Mark Faber is the author of a book called The Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. The Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. That's a great title, by the way, isn't it? We're full of gloom, boom, and doom. And he had a conversation on CNBC today. And he talked a little bit about some of the things that are going on in governments across Europe and here in the United States. Now, leaders of the 27 European Union member states are huddled together discussing ways of strengthening fiscal discipline in the European Union. At the same time, they want to tighten financial regulations to stop another economic crisis, right? So they want to strengthen fiscal discipline there and tighten financial regulation. But here in the United States, the Federal Reserve is set to become the most powerful financial regulator under this new financial reform bill. It's still being discussed in Congress. So Faber says, I think, that governments have become like a cancer. They have expanded in the financial system. Faber says, I think the biggest problem is too much intervention. Whatever the government touches is usually done worse than in the private sector. Well, we've been talking about that ad infinitum, right? And so he's just giving a credence to what we've been saying. Now, markets usually give signals when something goes wrong. But if the government intervenes, as in the case of the European Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, and the Bank of England, government intervention then hides a lot of what's really going on, right? They mask it. They start throwing things at it. They start covering it up, right? With money, tax money. They try to slow down a kind of a natural occurring phenomena, you might say, in the private sector, right? When Wall Street goes up and down now, used to be you let it go up and down. And it worked its way out. But then we had government intervention. The classic case is the Great Depression. We had government intervention in a depression. A depression that started in 1929, like many depressions we've had before. I say depressions, recessions at that point. It turned into a depression. But we've had the ups and downs of the stock market many times before the Great Depression of 1929 when we had the stock market crash. And many of them were bad, but they didn't linger. But then we had the 1929 stock market crash, and it continued, the depression continued, until the start of World War II, December of 1941. So basically, 13 straight years. Now, why did we have 13 straight years when we had the federal government under Franklin Roosevelt throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at the Depression? Why did we have it for 13 years? Can you figure it out? Because the government continued to mask it, and in masking it, basically was throwing gasoline on the fire and continuing to keep it going. That's what happened. And that's what Mark Faber is saying. He says, I think any government intervention has unintended consequences and is negative. Eventually, the market will break the intervention and things will blow out. But he says government stimulus packages create volatility in the stock market because they distort the economic indicators. Now, supporters of past government intervention to throw money into the economy have said that without the world economy, without having done it, the world economy would have been in much worse shape. They say with unemployment being even higher than it is now. But they can't in any way, with any logic, show that that is the case. Throwing money from the government at a problem is the philosophy of John Maynard Keynes, from which we get the Keynesian philosophy. And it's the kind of philosophy that Franklin Roosevelt used in the Great Depression. So now everything is going haywire in the in Europe, and it's beginning to go haywire, of course, here in the United States. And I'm just looking at this article about Mark Faber and his interview. And basically, he says, I think the U.S. Fed, the economic banking, European banking, and other central banks have no other option. They will continue to monetize and buy bad paper, period. And he says the central bankers are precisely the ones that do not know that excessive money creation and excessive debt creation leads to additional crisis down the road. He says Europe's problems are bigger than the ones here because in the U.S. the economy is probably bottomed out. He says if the S&P, the Standard and Poor's, drops another 10 or 15% from its current level, you can rest assured we'll have another stimulus package here. Anyway, I think Mark Faber echoes the kind of things that, you know, we've talked about for a long time. We're going to take our next break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the oil spill and Sarbanes-Oxley and all kinds of things. So don't go away. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home of the heroes and
villains. If I could guarantee every day was sunny, I would.
If I could guarantee even some sleep, I would.
I would, too. And if you could hire a business with a guarantee, you would. Now you can. Protect yourself with a super guarantee from Super Media. Just look in the Verizon Yellow Pages. From plumbers to movers to glass repair, you'll get the job done right, or we'll step in and help to make it right. Best of all, it's free.
While I can't guarantee my cooking, I can protect myself with the super guarantee.
Why wouldn't you? Just look for the shield in the only Yellow Pages with a super guarantee, the Verizon Yellow Pages, and let the good guys, you know, the ones in the yellow capes, come to the rescue.
On its way now, the new Verizon Yellow Pages with larger, easier-to-read print. Look inside for the super guarantee from Super Media. Restrictions apply. See full terms and conditions for this program at superguarantee.com.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Stu White.
And I'm Jim Grady. Join Stu and I for the Maximum Motoring Radio Show.
We've had a lot of great guests in the past. David E. Davis, former editor from Car and Driver Magazine.
Founder of Automobile Magazine.
Automobile Magazine. Bob Lutz, vice chairman of GM.
Wayne Carini from Chasing Classic Cars.
And we just have a good old time here.
Car guys talking about cars. Yeah. So if you have a hot rod or a low rod or a...
Or no rod. Give us a call.
The Maximum Motoring Radio Show.
New time, Thursday afternoon at 3 on the Tantalk Radio Network.
I'm going to make a citizen's arrest and take this stuff.
You're going to make a citizen's arrest on me?
Yeah, I'm going to take this stuff here.
Yeah?
All right, I'm holding you. Call, yeah. Get the marshal.
We'll see who's wrong.
You
get the marshal right now?
We'll see who's wrong.
You think there will come a day that you'll be vindicated?
Come on, OJ. Give me a break. It's Gary Garver, and I'm live every Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, on the Tantalk Radio Network. Brought to you by X-Polls. Go to xpollus.com.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, and we've been watching a video here of Tony Hayward, the CEO of British Petroleum, as he's being slapped around by the Congressional Committee. It's actually a subcommittee. And
wait till the committee gets to him.
Wait till the committee gets to him. It's just the subcommittee right now. Yeah. And the physical assault is just unbelievable. One of the guys got up and snuck up behind him while he was talking on the mic and rabbit-punched him. Hmm. And there's another guy. They're showing some of the earlier footage now. It's already occurred, but someone got him in headlock while he was talking, and the other guy was rabbit-punching him, and they wrestled him to the ground.
And then
three other members of the subcommittee got up and started kicking him while he was there, and he's flopping around like a seal on the carpeted floor there in the subcommittee room. It's very, very sad in a way.
Well,
but I guess that's the way...
And he's crying, no, I will not plug the leak. I will not. No, stop.
He refuses to plug the leak. Yep. They're going to keep kicking him until he agrees to go down there and plug the leak.
Personally.
Well, anyway, I guess that's what a lot of people would probably wish would happen, right?
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
That they would physically assault him and and pillory him.
Right.
Pillory and assault.
Let the oil flow.
And run the gauntlet. And that's it.
An executive. That,
give him a taste of his own medicine. I didn't think of that. We pour thick crude all over him while he sits there and then dump a barrel of chicken feathers on him.
Yeah.
Duck feathers.
Tarring and feathers.
What do you think?
We should get revive some of these cruel and unusual punishments and humiliations.
You know, speaking of that, did you know that there's a guy in Utah that this morning was to face the firing squad for an execution? He chose that manner of execution.
Smart.
And I don't know whether that occurred or not because they were still, his attorney was still trying to appeal. Now, the guy's been on death row there now for quite a few years, 20-some years on death row. And finally, all of the appeals have been exhausted. Got to look that up and see if that gentleman finally had his. But he chose the firing squad. And I read that actually some people think the firing squad is actually more humane than a gas chamber.
Well, I would say so. What about 40 bullets going through your heart at the same time?
Well, there's like seven people. No, there's seven people that aim and fire, and they have a basically they have a target pinned on the guy's chest. Really? Really? No. And only one of them.
A little happy face or what? What do they put up? I mean.
And only one of those people with the guns, only one of the executioners has a real bullet.
Oh.
And that is so that the nobody knows for sure who did the deed.
Okay.
I'm not kidding about that.
I vaguely remember hearing that.
And so the question is whether or not that guy was executed. We'll have to check in on that.
Well, you got to check catch the live feed on CNN a little later.
Possibly.
That would be good.
Lee, you actually, seriously, you did take a look at some information, though, about whether or not the Tampa Bay beaches are being affected. What did you find?
Just an article popped up from good old Google News from the Florida AP. Spill could affect Florida tourism industry for years. This is from St. Petersburg. It's actually the Associated Press. Tampa Bay area tourism executive says it could take years for the region's tourism industry to recover from the Gulf oil spill, even if a drop of crude never makes it to Florida's West Coast beaches, which is, of course, where we are. D.T. Minnick, executive director of the Tourism Bureau for St. Petersburg and Clearwater, says advanced bookings are off 20% to 30%. Whoa. Because of a perception that all of Florida's Gulf Coast beaches are already fouled by oil. Events and conventions have been canceled into April 2011.
Oh, wow. So your point's well taken, because you thought that's the case, and now it does sound like it.
I guessed right today.
It's unbelievable that people that would want to come down wouldn't like do some real checking and find out whether or not that is the case. But there is a herd mentality in the human condition. And maybe they think, well, maybe it's okay now, but if I do go down there, maybe then all of that stuff will be bad and da-da. You know, the truth is, if I was a tourist and I was thinking about coming down, it would almost reinforce my coming down because I know I'd have a lot of choices of places and probably discount prices. I don't know. To me, it would work in reverse. I'd rather come down to a beach that's rather open, wouldn't you? If you had your family and you were going to come down for a week or something?
Yeah, if you're a smart traveler, get on the phone and cut some deals.
Exactly. Right? So we encourage that.
In fact, why don't they have a big ad for this area that says,
I think so.
Hey, the beaches are clean and we're giving great deals. Come on down, please.
Perfect. I think exactly that. And maybe that's what they're thinking of doing. Hopefully somebody's got to be thinking about it. Somebody's got to be thinking about it. Well.
You know, Paul, the guy who's getting – don't you think that's that's sort of a masculine way to go, don't you think, in front of the fire, as opposed to having, you know, the electric chair or some gruesome sort of torturous, talk about cruel and unusual, I mean, or injected with some horrible chemical or whatever it is they do.
Is the electric chair still being used anywhere now, though?
I don't know.
We stopped using it here in Florida. They used to call it Old Sparky.
Well, it was using too much electricity. Obama said, forget it. You know, you got to use. They're using the solar powered chairs now. But they don't produce enough voltage to. do the deal. So
you know, I never thought of a solar electrocution.
Why don't they microwave people? I mean,
goodness.
You know.
Okay, but the truth is that we are now using the drugs that are administered, the different injections, and of course that has been challenged as well. But I don't think the electric chair is being used in any state anymore. It was kind of considered cruel and unusual punishment. So we've gone to the injection of different lethal drugs, as opposed to also not using a gas pellet dropped in a chamber. California, you know, was the first one to use the gas chamber. And they were using the gas chamber back, I think, in the early 60s, if not the late 50s, the gas chamber, where everybody else was using the electric chair or hanging still, or firing squad. I don't know. How did we ever get into all of this, by the way?
I don't know. You know the guy in front of the firing squad?
Yeah.
They offered him a cigarette, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, no, I quit years ago. And I mean, you know, if he's only going to live another minute,
he say something like, oh, no, it's bad for my health.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, they offered him a steak dinner, you know, and he said, no, my cholesterol is really high. We're talking about morbid, huh, Paul?
Oh, boy. Oh, Lee, I've missed you with all of your very bad jokes.
Thank you. I miss you. Likewise.
There's been a poll, as long as we're talking about, we're going to take a break in a moment. And then when we come back, by the way, we're going to be talking with our friend John Berlow from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. John is monitoring the Supreme Court. They are publicly going to announce, and might be doing it right now, their decision on the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, whether portions of it are frankly unconstitutional. Before we do that, though, and before we go to break, did you know that Louisiana voters believe President Bush did a better job with Katrina than President Obama is doing with the oil spill? This is a new poll, and this is the Public Policy Polling Survey. It said shows 50% of Louisiana voters rated Bush's performance in 2005 better than Obama's. Only 35% picked Obama. Now, this is a Democratic-owned firm that conducted the poll. And, of course, it's coming as Obama tries to inspire confidence in what his administration is doing regarding the oil spill. So, Bobby Jindal is the governor of Louisiana, and he is perceived as trying to get things done there. But the federal government is not. Does this not come back to what, Lee, you and I were talking about this when Katrina was going on, and that is that the federal government cannot respond to an ongoing crisis. They may be able to come in after it's over with in the so-called mop-up, you know, like when we had hurricanes in Florida, the Federal Emergency Management Agency comes in to help pay off people with money. But they can't come in during the crisis and do it. They don't have people that are experts in stopping or fixing the houses or whatever. And it was the same thing with the oil spill. They can't. They don't have anybody that knows how to plug that spill. They don't. They don't. And so this is where we expect so much of the federal government and don't realize that they cannot do it. The local and state governments are much, much more effective at getting things done. And Bobby Jindal, if allowed to do it, I guarantee you would get things done better than the Obama administration will ever be able to do. Anyway, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk with John Berlow. We got to give him a call. And a decision by the Supreme Court on Sarbanes-Oxley. Don't go away.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. June 17, 2010. Gold opened this morning at 1238.40. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for 1271.33, 635.66 for a half ounce, or 317.83 for the quarter ounce. That's 1271.33, 635.66, or 317.83.
Making the right decision is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or worse, depression? Many investors are turning to gold as a common-sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold. Discussing costs, benefits, risks, the book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold can be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, this book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
So, you think all water parks are created equal? Think again. Only one Orlando water park is built to give you that high-octane double-shot adrenaline rush, and that's Wet n' Wild, where it's all about the thrills. Bigger, higher, faster, with more multi-person thrill rides than any other water park around. Where else but Wet n' Wild can you experience the mind-numbing buzz of Brainwash, the hyptronic groove of the Disco H2O, or the cosmic rush of the Black Hole, the Next Generation? Right now at Wet n' Wild, Florida residents can get a full day of pulse-pounding thrills for just $32 plus tax with a valid Florida ID. So if you're looking for pure exhilaration, look no further than the park named by the Travel Channel as one of America's most extreme water parks. Wet n' Wild, in Orlando, or on the web at wetandwildorlando.com.
Hey, we're back here on Freedom Works, and thank you very much for being with us. And we are delighted to have our friend John Berlow. He is the director of the Center for Entrepreneurs and Investors at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we brought John on. Hopefully, we were going to have a decision announced by the Supreme Court on a portion of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Now, CEI and their attorneys have been involved in a constitutional challenge to a portion of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. This is an act that involves the way businesses are able to. We'll have John explain it because I'm not very good at it, but basically. There's a challenge to the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, whether or not the board members were appointed legally. And CEI, along with some others, say that these officers must be appointed by the president, and in this case, they were not. John, welcome to Freedom Works again.
Paul, thank you so much for having me on. And yes, this is our first Supreme Court case. And we've just been on pins and needles every Monday and every day this court is in session, which was today, thinking that they might issue the decision. They have to issue it by the end of June, today they did not issue the decision.
Okay, so
which would be a very important decision, both in terms of the Constitution, which is always important, and in terms of this regulation that could be costing U.S. entrepreneurs, the economy, $1.4 trillion in direct and indirect costs.
Right. John, first of all, would you explain to the listeners what the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is all about? And then could you explain why CEI was involved in a challenge to a portion of it?
Well, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was the last financial reform, quote-unquote, that was rushed through Congress after the Enron scandal. It was approved almost unanimously with only Ron Paul and Jeff Flake and one other congressman voting against it. But now there's even Speaker Pelosi has said, you know, that it's overreached, and it's really meant that a lot of businesses can't go public, or that the costs of being public are just too high, they have to stay private, and it's tripled accounting costs, yet have accountants chase, but it's done things that are force companies to do things that really don't have much benefit for shareholders, that either they have to look, accountants are looking at who has the office keys, things like that, and it's called the Accounts for Employment Act, and meanwhile they still didn't catch some of the off-balance sheet accounting that they did in Lehman Brothers and elsewhere, and we're challenging the main regulatory body, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, because they're the ones that issue these, you know, costly regulations. They have the power basically to tax public companies through an accounting support fee to affect international trade. They pay themselves more than the president, yet they're neither appointed by the president nor confirmed by the Senate. They're appointed by the SEC two steps away from the president with no congressional oversight or advice and consent from the Senate. The Constitution makes it very clear that principal officers of the United States wielding such authority have to be both appointed by the president and confirmed with the advice and consent of the Senate. So we're arguing that this is in violation of the Constitution, and the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in December and will decide by the end of June.
Now, first of all, has the Supreme Court made the decision and they have just not announced it? And secondly, how do you think the court will rule?
Well, the court, I wish I knew. The court always operates with such a mystique. Some say they decide, you know, even before they hear the arguments. They may have, you know, had their basically made, some of the judges may have made up their minds then or right after hearing the argument and may just, you know, be deciding how to write it, or because, you know, it's a lot of constitutional issues involved. I think the reason we're hopeful is it's a lot easier to, and generally takes a lot shorter time if they wanted to dismiss a constitutional challenge, say we think your case is without merit, than to actually affirm and decide, you know, how this will apply to other cases. Because if we win, it will affect the Sarbanes-Oxley law, which is holding back a lot of entrepreneurs and holding back our economy, but have implications for a lot of the way government officials are appointed, including the Obama administration czars that are done without Senate confirmation, and constitutional questions have been raised about those. So it could be that they're writing a very careful decision that about how exactly it violates the Appointments Clause and setting up parameters for other cases.
Yeah, so this could have a domino effect. If they rule that indeed this is unconstitutional, the way these board members were appointed, could there then be a step towards saying, well, now let's take a look at the czars appointed by Obama?
I really think so. A lot of different things. And this is really, you know, it would have a domino effect, but a domino effect in terms of respect for the Constitution, which is always a good thing. Because this is, nothing in the Constitution should ever be seen as trivial or a technicality, even if it's the structure of government. The founders were very familiar with tyranny, very familiar with how the British government and other governments, you know, lack of accountability there. And they did this to having the presidential appointment and Senate confirmation so you wouldn't have offices spawning offices and new bureaucracy, the hordes of officers that Jefferson wrote, you know, in the Declaration of Independence. So you'd have this accountability mechanism. And I think there's a direct relation between the lack of accountability for the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board and the costly rules they've issued that don't serve shareholders, because nobody's holding their feet to the fire, nobody's holding them accountable. If you don't like, you know, what the rules under Sarbanes-Oxley, there's really no one you could vote out of office. You couldn't do it for Bush and you couldn't do it for Obama because they really have no control over this.
So they're sort of a renegade group, and they're getting paid, I think you said, more than the president.
Almost the head of the PCAOB gets paid almost, I think now it's almost $800,000 a year.
Oh.
And I think the board members are between $600,000 and $700,000 a year.
We're talking again with John Berlow. He is the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurs and Investors.
It's actually, there was a mistake on the release, the investors and entrepreneurs.
Oh,
right.
I stand corrected.
But they go together because you need, you know, entrepreneurs, yes, and investors need each other. If investors aren't respected, like I have some problems with this BP thing yesterday that they did without shareholder approval. They sort of rammed through, and Tony Hayward gets less heat, but then the BP, the pension holders and things like that have BP aren't doing that. But investors at the same time need, you know, the onerous rules on entrepreneurs hurt investor return as well if you have to spend all your money on accounting and not in growing your business.
Yeah, and you said that the Sarbanes-Oxley Act actually came after the Enron scandal. So it's one
in 2002.
In 2002, so it's an eight-year-old rule, and it's stifling the ability of companies to become public companies that are private companies, and also stifling businesses to expand because of the fear of doing things that do not follow these new rules. Is that part of it?
It really is. It's really put a premium on the good types of risks, the kind of risk that, you know, not like financial risk, but companies like the technology and biotechnology companies. In fact, the biotechnology industry organization is saying we're having to spend money on accounting that could be developing new medicine. And the guy, Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot, said that he could not have gone public today if these rules had been in effect. And it's really the market cap of companies that that are going public. It's gone from like 50 million before Sarbanes-Oxley to 250 million. You have some companies like Google that went public only when they had a market valuation of $1 billion, and Facebook may have a market valuation of $10 billion, still hasn't gone public. Whereas back in the 80s, Home Depot went public when there were just four stores. So companies, that's part of it. You know, you need to either raise money for expansions through debt or equity. And now companies can't do through growing businesses can't do through equity because of all these prohibitive costs of going public. So that makes them more dependent on borrowing at precisely the time there's a credit crunch.
John, I want to thank you so much. We're running short on time, but I want to thank you so very much for explaining Sarbanes-Oxley and what the effects are to businesses. And we're going to keep monitoring when the Supreme Court comes out. We'd like to have you back on when they do, if you don't mind. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
I always love it. And CEI.org is our website.
Thank you so much, John. John Berlow, CEI. My friends, thank you very much for being with us today. Have a wonderful Thursday. Freedom works, and we'll be back tomorrow.